What's good, everybody? This is Abstract Dynasty, the show where we use stats, theory, and experience to challenge consensus, unearth value, and hone our craft as Dynasty players. I'm AJ, and today I'll be firing through some notables in the top 8 rounds of Sleeper's ADP. Let's talk shop. So, upon considering the newest topic for the next episode, I was looking at some of the mid-round running back values and their ADP. And lo and behold, Sleeper, out of the generosity of their heart, made their full ADP data available to podcasters like myself. So not a sponsor, but shout out Sleeper. Guys, if you're not playing on Sleeper, I don't know what to tell you anymore. It's just such a great way to play fantasy. Totally customizable, user-friendly. Anyway, I wanted to run down their ADPs as we sit here at the beginning of June. Now, all of these ADPs are going to be from Dynasty Superflex format, and these are as of June 1st. So anything that happened post June 1st, perhaps I'm referring to a certain stud wide receiver that was just traded yesterday. It is not reflected in ADP. I'm not going to go through every single player's ADP, but if you'd like to open up your phone and follow along, open up a mock draft or live draft, and then scroll through the ADPs. So Dynasty Superflex, let's get it. First round. Relatively status quo here. There's definitely some variation across different platforms, but agree with most of the names up here. The guy worth mentioning, I would say, is Saquon Barkley, ADP 6.6 right now. Love, love, love Saquon Barkley. This is technically a discount relative to the value he provides when he's healthy, but this could end up being a bit rich if this ADP holds, if Saquon is limited or isn't ready for week one of the 2021 season. Tore his ACL, MCL, and meniscus in week two last year, but ended up deferring surgery until October, which ended up being almost a month. From what I've heard from sports doctors, this is often done when there's a swelling issue, or at just the very least, letting the swelling go down naturally helps the recovery process from the actual ACL surgery, rather than just hacking in there real quick and starting the rehab. So I'm not exactly worried about his future as much, but definitely this year, if he's not playing 16 games, this is kind of steep for me. Giants beat writers have also already come out and said that they don't believe that Saquon Barkley is going to handle the lion's share right off the bat coming off of the injury. Quietly, the Giants have signed 5 different running backs this offseason, including guys like Devontae Booker and Corey Clement, none of whom are actual threats to Saquon's workload when he's healthy. But I think there's a difference between signing a bunch of backs as camp bodies for OTAs and training camp, and then there's insulating the backfield just in case maybe Saquon's not ready. They don't have to force him to get on the field. But they did pick up his 5th-year option. He is under contract for next year as well, and I have no concerns about his longevity long-term. However, the second contract still remains a question mark. I know as of late, franchises have actually been opening the vaults for the elite running backs like Ezekiel Elliott, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, and most recently Aaron Jones. So Saquon probably still has a good shot at getting that second contract, but until the pen is on paper, I do want to hold my breath before I just brush it all aside. Now, with that said, if this does somewhat suppress Saquon's value and I can get him a little later in the first, maybe like 8, 9, or possible, I've even seen him fall to the second, that's an absolute steal. Not putting the full burden on him and letting him ramp up is much better, is what we want to hear for his longevity. But it does knock him a little bit as far as this year. Also in the same range, we have Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert, who are 5'6 and 6'6 respectively. A little bit rich for my taste. As far as Justin Herbert, I'm not ready to just anoint him. I know he won Offensive Rookie of the Year. He was amazing. But I've said many, many times, I want to see him do more of the easy stuff. I'm sure you've heard it by now. Per PFF, he had the 3rd highest grade under pressure in the league as a rookie versus the 27th ranked grade from a clean pocket. And the only reason this worries me is because this is a similar phenomenon to what we saw with Carson Wentz during his MVP caliber 2017 year, where he looked like one of the absolute best quarterbacks in the league. Ended up getting hurt. Other circumstances factored into that, but this is not me saying I don't love Justin Herbert. I just want to see some of the easy stuff. Year two with a new coaching staff and a new offense, I just want to see some more. That's all. I'd prefer him towards the back of the first round as well. Maybe early second, same thing. But I'm really not going to fight you on Herbert. Now, Lamar Jackson, And kind of what I'm getting at when I was alluding to Herbert as well, and when I brought up Carson Wentz, is that when you hit the ceiling with one of these breakout guys, you feel like there's just no way they could come down and nothing could ever change the trajectory that they're on. And then last year happened for Lamar Jackson. While he was pretty much fine for fantasy, on the whole, he was a little bit hit or miss in the beginning of the year when the schedule was harder. And once it softened up, he was really able to just do Lamar Jackson things on terrible defenses, rush the ball. There are issues with that receiving core as well as Lamar Jackson's passing. Now, whether you want to put that on Lamar Jackson or the receivers or this offensive scheme, Greg Roman draws a lot of hate for his passing game coordinating. Whatever it was, the Ravens struggled to pass consistently as a whole last year. The Ravens have brought in a lot of pass catchers this offseason, signing Sammy Watkins and drafting Rashad Bateman as well as Tylan Wallace. But this was a huge problem area for them, and are coming into 21 with the NFL's second hardest strength of schedule in 21. I like to tie that to the quarterbacks because the quarterback are the main driving force for a team's success. If it doesn't improve, it's going to be difficult for the Ravens to just sustain a top offense with just a run game. But as far as fantasy, you can't deny that Lamar Jackson's ceiling is as good as anyone in the NFL. Such a stupid high floor, is a dual threat quarterback, still very much a wanted asset. I think the only issue with Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert here is probably my own personal bias that I would almost prefer Dak Prescott straight up to both of them, who is sitting at the 11.6 right now, coming off his own injury. But it's like you're getting the floor from Lamar Jackson with the ceiling of Justin Herbert all in one player in an elite offense with elite receivers. And I just think Dak is undervalued right now. And the Cowboys have the second easiest strength of schedule, according to the NFL. But again, no problem with any of Saquon, Lamar Jackson, and Justin Herbert in the first round. We're just kind of nitpicking up here. Second round. Boy, did I have so much to say about Derrick Henry. I was so ready not to outright call him a bust, but at the time before Julio Jones was traded to the Titans, I believed that 13.5 ADP was just flat out too high for Derrick Henry to go with all of the turnover Tennessee had had. The team did lose Arthur Smith, offensive coordinator, and promoted from within. Somewhat of a concern because Arthur Smith was a very good play caller. However, Tennessee Titans put their nuts on the table, and in spite of losing a good portion of their receiving depth, trading a second and fourth round pick to the Falcons to bring Julio Jones in and form one of the best receiving duos in the league, pretty much overnight. And a move like this just alleviates so many different concerns about how much was system, how much was player driven, how sustainable the Titans were. With that being said, there's still one small loose end to tie for Derrick Henry. And that is just the fact that he's not a pass catcher. It just is what it is. And he is always a little bit susceptible to game script if he's not going to be involved as a receiver. So the majority of the offseason moves that the Titans have made, those resources have been allotted to rebuilding and revamping that defense. Departed with almost every starting corner and brought in Janoris Jenkins, Caleb Farley, and pass rusher Bud Dupree, I can at least see where the defense is going. I at least feel better about the defense now. And combining that with bringing a guy like Julio Jones in, probably not the best outlook for Dynasty because the wrong side of 25 and a mammoth workload over the last couple seasons. 2,000 yards rushing is usually an accolade you sell on, not buy on. But with the whole team pointing firmly upwards, I'm good with Henry. Maybe not in the second round, but I'm okay with Henry. Down at 18.3, we have Joe Burrow. Reports came out a little while ago that Joe Burrow is, quote, all systems go for week one. Cincinnati Bengals fans and Joe Burrow owners in Dynasty can breathe a sigh of relief. And man, between the Bengals drafting Chase and every 3 days Bengals Twitter putting out a video clip of Joe Burrow throwing and moving in the pocket, I feel like he's going to rise from here. And I don't honestly hate that. I mean, I do believe the Chase-Burrow connection thing is real. Talk about some of the most productive quarterback-wide receiver combos that we've ever seen in this league. They have that second nature connection that you can't replace. So when you bring that in with a very solid rookie season from T. Higgins and the always serviceable Tyler Boyd in the slot, this is a legit top six wide receiver core in the league. You could easily see a Kirk Cousins-like season from Burrow, permitting health. Now, I will add, though, that Joe Burrow is coming off the ACL. And even before that, while he could run, I didn't really see a ton of scrambling upside or rushing upside from Burrow as a prospect. It's kind of the same thing with Trevor Lawrence. Yes, he can run. There's no problem with that. But you're not going to feature that aspect in his game. It's just an add-on, both in the pocket, as well as being able to extend plays and maybe catch an extra first down here and there with his legs. So if I'm staring down the barrel between Joe Burrow and maybe somebody like Justin Fields or Trey Lance, that's a little tougher of a conversation because their ceilings are just that much higher for that rushing upside, but is easily in that top 8 to 12 conversation. If that line can improve, if Zach Taylor can stop hanging him out to dry, Burrow can end up putting up really nice numbers this year. So I'm fine taking that in the second round. Last one in the second round I'll talk about is DeAndre Swift. 20.2 right now. Very, very contentious pick right now. All of the news of Anthony Lynn coming to the Lions, signing Jamal Williams, talk of them signing Todd Gurley. People are very, very scared about DeAndre Swift right now. As of now, I'm not overreacting to Anthony Lynn's weird running back fetish. You have to remember that when Anthony Lynn was the head coach of the Chargers, they already had Melvin Gordon ahead of Austin Eckler, and Austin Eckler did some excellent work with LA. The Chargers were top 5 in running back target percentage in both of the last 2 years under Anthony Lynn. So I do think there will be some growing pains with Swift's rushing because I think Jamal Williams and Todd Gurley or whoever they end up signing or not signing, it could get a little messy for early downs in red zone work. But DeAndre Swift is unquestioned the best third down and 2 minute drill back that this team has. And this team is still very bad. The defense is bad. He really has no competition for targets, which I'll talk about a little later when we speak about another Lions player. And new quarterback Jared Goff also has a history of targeting the running back for what it's worth. Twice fed Todd Gurley an average of 80 targets during the Los Angeles Rams heyday. If you want to move off of Swift, I understand. It does seem like the top end upside is not going to be there this year if the touchdowns and early down work is going to be a question mark. But until we see this stuff in action and until we hear more reports, until we see preseason and early season of DeAndre Swift just being totally phased out, I'm not going to overreact. He's still, without a doubt, the best back, and having offensive coordinator like Anthony Lynn is ultimately still a positive for him. Third round, Antonio Gibson at 32 even. Gibson was already getting receiving hype. Coach Ron Rivera coming out saying that he was ready for Gibson to take the next step. The offense is projected to be better this year, bringing in Ryan Fitzpatrick under center. And he only played his very first professional season as a running back last year. You could only assume that he was going to get better. The Antonio Gibson hype train was leaving the station full steam ahead. However, latest report, Gibson is still being bothered by the toe injury from last season. Not what Gibson owners wanted to hear. Yes, it sounds like just a toe injury, but toe injuries are a very humbling issue for many NFL players, especially running backs that have to cut and plant so frequently over the course of a game. And the fact that he's still being bothered by it when they said that he wouldn't require surgery is a little bit of a red flag. Had it not been for that, I probably would have been pushing for Antonio Gibson to go even higher than the third round ADP. This just sucks. All you can do now is hope that a little bit of extra time and rest can help rehab it and that he should be good for this upcoming year. But I don't expect him to miss games for this. Now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, sitting at 33.2, I do believe is a bit low. Now, CEH's hype had already skyrocketed last year as the first running back picked in the first round. And then when fellow backfield mate Damian Williams opted out of the season, wheels were up. Disappointed a little bit relative to where people thought he was going to be. Really struggled between the tackles, especially at the red zone. Didn't really score a lot, but was absolute money in PPR leagues. Very, very consistent receiving floor. It was a great starting point. And then Kansas City's offensive line started to fall apart in the playoffs. And whether or not that was the main reason why they lost the Super Bowl, they prioritized revamping that offensive line. They sent their first round pick to Baltimore to bring in Orlando Brown Jr., who's a mauler left tackle, very good run blocker, so pass blocker from what we've seen. Also spent a boatload on guard Joe Tooney in free agency, another mauler in the run game from New England. And they even brought Kyle Long out of retirement. Again, another mauler. This offensive line, whether or not it's better on the whole, on paper, looks like a much improved run-blocking offensive line. And the Chiefs have really not been a good run-blocking unit for quite some time. They've really just run the ball based on scheme and threat of the pass. And CEH still doesn't have a very tall depth chart to climb as far as how much he can handle in this offense. And if this O-line can help him convert some more red zone carries into touchdowns on what is easily a top scoring offense with Patrick Mahomes in tow, people are sleeping on CEH right now. And while I'm down here at 31.3, I might as well bring up one of the last picks of the second round as well. Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, Green Bay Packers. Obviously, these guys are at a suppressed cost with the Rodgers rumors. Could end up major, major values. These are both league-winning assets that anybody would want on their team, but they are inherent risks. You just got to shoot your shot or wait for one of them to slip to a value. I think if Rodgers leaves, it would hurt Aaron Jones more than Devontae Adams, because Devontae Adams has shown that he can be a pretty great receiver in the small sample size we have without Rodgers in Green Bay. All right, fourth round. A pair of tight ends, Kyle Pitts and Darren Waller, 37.9 and 39.9 respectively. My God, Pitts' ADP is going to explode now. He should probably be the de facto number two in the Atlanta offense. So he's probably going to shoot up from here, which is probably going to make Waller the value tight end compared to Kittle and Kelsey, as well as now Kyle Pitts. But his age and history will keep him undervalued. Waller is 29. And has very light NFL mileage for a 29-year-old tight end. For those of you who didn't know, he was originally drafted as a wide receiver by the Ravens, struggled to get on the field, had some substance abuse problems, was suspended for the 2017 season by the NFL, and later waived by the Ravens, got a shot with the Raiders, and ran with it, and is a top tight end. So the fact that he's 29 really doesn't even scare me. So he would probably be my favorite tight end to target, especially in tight end premium, just because he's coming at a full round or two discount compared to these other three. But this fourth round is where you start to see those rookies start to sneak in there. And that's especially true with Trey Lance and Justin Fields, rookie quarterbacks going at 38.3 and 41 even, respectively. Yes, there are questions about how soon these two start as rookies, but counting on these guys to be there in the fourth is foolhardy. As soon as the top 8 or 9 running backs are off the board, it's anything goes. And there's so many value wide receivers later in the draft that people are just sucking up quarterbacks like crazy. So it would not shock me if Lance and Fields start to get sucked up at that second and third round turn. And the minute we get some positive news on either Trey Lance or Justin Fields looking good in camp, or maybe some more clarity on their incumbents situation, because Jimmy Garoppolo and Andy Dalton are not exactly the scariest starters out there. They are placeholders because these two guys are the future. And if these guys can show that they're ready, or at least able to run a competent offense as a rookie, they'll be on the field sooner rather than later. Because both of these teams have legitimate Super Bowl aspirations. Because if you don't take these two guys right here, Aaron Rodgers and Jalen Hurts bring up the rear of this round. That's what the tier is here. Anywhere from 10 to 12 quarterbacks are going in the top two rounds. So if you want Lance and Fields, might behoove you to maybe reach around. And they're only going to rise the closer we get to preseason and the more news that comes out. And now, the impetus of what I was going to do this week's episode on was a couple of running backs, Joe Mixon and Josh Jacobs, 41.9 and 44.1 respectively. Here's what I'm going to say about these two guys. Good running back production on a bad team is hard to sustain because too many things work against the run game on a bad offense or bad team in general. Josh Jacobs was very boom bust last year despite a top 10 finish, which was in a very weak year for running backs as a whole. Josh Jacobs averaged only 8.3 fantasy points per game in the 9 games that he didn't score a touchdown, and he wasn't very involved in the pass game. So unless the Raiders were dominating time of possession and beating up people at the line of scrimmage or facing some terrible team with positive game scripts, Josh Jacobs was at best an upside RB2 at points last year. And if that wasn't bad enough, The Raiders, in their infinite wisdom, decided to gut almost their entire O-line, as well as sign Kenyon Drake to the backfield to presumably handle passing down work. Now, that's a major issue. Josh Jacobs wasn't a receiver his rookie year, wasn't a receiver last year, and third year, they bring in somebody else who is a very capable pass catcher. What you saw from Kenyon Drake in Arizona last year is not who Kenyon Drake has been. Kenyon Drake was a very, very good dual threat running back for the Dolphins not too long ago. So Josh Jacobs' upside is legitimately capped here. Still usable, but capped. So the Nuke games are still there. He could still go off for 3 touchdowns. The whole team needs to be better if he's going to be a consistent RB1 like we wanted him to be, because now he has legitimate competition for touches. Now, Joe Mixon, completely and outright busted last year, despite his breakout year in 2019. Now, I'll give you, it was pretty much a lost year because he got hurt early, and then subsequently Burrow got hurt with his own season ender, and it was a historically bad offensive line in Cincinnati. No running back succeeded in that offense. I got to be honest with you, I'm a little surprised to see Joe Mixon here at 41.9 in the fourth round. I thought the minute that they cut Gio Bernard that people were going to start hyping up the Joe Mixon RB1 hype train again. And so I'm very proud of the sleeper community, or the people that have been drafting on sleeper. Fool me once, shame on you, Joe Mixon. Fool me twice, shame on me. I just want to lay this out there. 2019 Joe Mixon is dead. What we saw from Joe Mixon, we're not going to see again, at least not that way. So Joe Mixon's breakout 2019 campaign, in which the Cincinnati Bengals pretty much just ran on 3 straight downs on defenses playing prevent, that garbage time production really added up for him. But per Fantasy Pros advanced snap count metrics, he was a less efficient per touch at 34.5 than Josh Jacobs was his rookie year on 60% of the snaps. And James Robinson was also better this year at 40.6 fantasy points per touch than Joe Mixon was in 2019. Joe Mixon's 16-game pace for 2020, in what he only played, 5 games? 1,141 yards, 11 touchdowns on 317 carries. That's 3.6 yards per carry. No NFL offense is going to give Joe Mixon 317 carries with that kind of efficiency, especially when the Bengals' run-pass percentage under Zach Taylor hasn't dipped below 60% pass in the 2 seasons he's been there. Defense will still be bad, and they have Joe Burrow and a top 6 wide receiver core in the league. He's going to be facing an uphill battle to actually hit the receiving thresholds that you're going to get from an Austin Eckler, Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, and CMC. The Bengals address the O-line. Check. They get Joe Burrow as well as draft Jamar Chase. This offense should be better. Check. And they cut Gio Bernard, so that at least gives him a slight inroads to some receiving work. Check. If you can get just something in those 3 areas, like 3-5% better rushing efficiency, offensive efficiency, and a couple extra receptions per game, that's RB2 with upside. So I'm still very much open to taking Mixon here. You see where that lands, and I am taking that with Joe Mixon over Josh Jacobs 843 times out of 10. Fifth round, Deshaun Watson. Do not draft Deshaun Watson. If you would like to know why you should not draft Deshaun Watson, go back and listen to last episode, Controversial Take on the Quarterback Controversies. Don't think he's a good value. I'm really only targeting him if I just plan on loading up on quarterbacks or I'm rebuilding. I'm really not excited about his 2021 prospects. Guy I do want to talk about in the fifth round, Chris Godwin, 52.1 ADP. A bit of a fall from grace for Chris Godwin. Finished as the number 2 overall wide receiver in 2019. Had a rough 2020. A lot of injury issues, which is very uncharacteristic for him. Ended up with a concussion early in the year, a nagging hamstring, and a broken finger that required surgeries, all within a 9-week span. I believe that finger also led to some uncharacteristic drops for him as well, but he was only credited with 3 on the season. I think people remember him dropping so many passes in the playoffs, but in fantasy, for whatever reason, it just didn't really hamper him that much. But when healthy, Chris Godwin is as talented a receiver as there is in this league. Now, why he's in the fifth round, I'm not really sure. I feel like that's kind of an overreaction. Maybe people are fearing a full year of Antonio Brown being with the team, who didn't sign until week 8 or 9 of last season and took some time to get up to speed. Maybe that's got some people spooked, but I dug into this offense and how they performed during the regular season and the postseason, and per PFF, Godwin ran about 57% of his routes from the slot, while Antonio Brown only had about 20%. So the Bruce Arians, Larry Fitzgerald role that Chris Godwin was gifted a couple years ago is still intact, and I do expect him to be the favorite to lead this team in targets. So even though it says on the Buccaneers depth chart that Chris Godwin is the right wide receiver or the Z or whatever, and Antonio Brown is the slot wide receiver, my money is still on Godwin in the slot. And the other thing you have to remember is that the Bucs were in 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, 63% of the time last year. And when they were in two tight end sets, that right wide receiver depth chart designation tells me that it's Antonio Brown that's coming off the field on two tight end sets, not Chris Godwin. So if for some reason everything we saw last year is completely thrown out the window and Antonio Brown starts dominating snaps and dominating targets, yeah, I'd be a little scared for Chris Godwin, but I just don't see that happening. They franchised this guy to come back so that Tampa Bay could run it back for a second Super Bowl. He never really had an issue with drops before last year. He never really had an issue with injury prior to last year. I'm back in on Chris Godwin. Love him as a value in the fifth round. Tell you who I don't love in the fifth round, Mark Andrews, 55.3. Look, I love the player Mark Andrews, but this is just too high for what he brings. He is a big play tight end that has some pretty good red zone acumen. Mark Andrews has averaged 13.5 yards per reception for his career and has a 28% red zone target share of the Ravens offense. Those are excellent numbers, especially for a tight end. But he just doesn't challenge the top three and now four elite tight ends who are threats for 100 catch seasons, who can threaten wide receivers on their own team. I'm not really concerned about the snap count thing with Mark Andrews. People were wondering if it was his diabetes that was causing him to be on the field for less time. He was on the field for 60% of the snaps last year. I don't really care about that. There's plenty of tight ends that are used that way that just aren't good blockers, and it just makes more sense to get a better blocker in certain situations and then use the better receiving threat on the receiving downs. The problem is, per Fantasy Pros Advanced Snap Metrics again, Mark Andrews was only utilized on 15% of his total snaps. So 15% of that 60% of the total snaps when he's splitting time with whoever else they have there at tight end, he can absolutely win you weeks. You're not going to be as consistent week in, week out, TE1. There's going to be peaks and valleys with Andrew. And all of that target volume in the red zone and deep down the field is subject to change with the influx of wide receivers that the Ravens have brought in this year. So until that utilization changes and he starts commanding those triple-digit target numbers, I'm just not taking Andrews at his price. He's not even my tight end five. Who is my tight end five is one of the top picks in the sixth round, TJ Hockenson, 61.8 right now on Sleeper. This is my tight end five for one reason and one reason only: opportunity. Similar to Mark Andrews, is not the elite athlete that Kittle, Kelce, Waller, and now Kyle Pitts are at the tight end position. But unlike Mark Andrews, Hockenson has a perfect opportunity this year to really make a name for himself in fantasy. He already had a 100-target season last year. With the new Lions regime coming to town, rolling out the tanks like World War II, this team has well over 300 vacated targets in 2021. And has a sorry-looking wide receiver core on deck. I'm talking Breshad Perriman, Tyrell Williams, drafting rookie Amon-Ra St. Brown, who is probably the only receiver in Detroit I'm remotely following right now. TJ Hockenson could easily finish with 100 receptions this year, which is money in PPR and especially in tight end premium. This is the one mid-round tight end that I'm saying, okay, fine, I'm not crazy about the talent, but to dominate targets like that, to dominate receptions, I'm definitely okay with taking TJ Hockenson. If I don't get one of the top four guys or TJ Hockenson, I'm probably just punting tight end for 2021. Circling back to the Bucs receivers again, Mike Evans, 62.1 in the sixth round. I'm a little worried about Evans, man. Seven straight 1,000-yard seasons is a lovely tagline. No issue with him as a player. He's an animal. He's always a threat for double-digit scores. But the target share has slowly been whittled away under Bruce Arians. First was the emergence of Chris Godwin, then Tom Brady coming to town, who was always known for spreading the ball around, them signing Antonio Brown midseason. Mike Evans just hasn't been the same without that 140 target floor that he had in the early years of his career. He's a little bit the Mark Andrews of wide receivers. But unlike Andrews, he lacks that stranglehold in the red zone. He's down to 23%. And he's far from the only competent red zone receiver in that core now, with Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, and even Gronkowski and Cameron Brate. Now, Mike Evans scored 13 touchdowns last year, which is great. But he was under 60 yards in 10 of those 16 games, and he averaged 8.5 fantasy points per game in the 6 games he didn't score a touchdown. Now, yes, he has Tom Brady under center. Yes, he's a great red zone threat. But week in, week out, I am definitely a little bit afraid to rely on Mike Evans as my wide receiver too if we get some touchdown regression this year. I mean, he had games last year where he was targeted between 2 and 4 times and ended up with 2 touchdowns, and his final total looks great, and it looks like he's got double digits for the majority of the season. So he still has the ability to go nuclear, can go multiple touchdown games, does have over 100-yard receiving games in his outcomes, but he's a little boom-bust. I want to supplement some floor in my wide receiver core if I have Mike Evans on my team. So I'm not saying don't take him in the 6th round. I'm just saying touchdowns get fluky year to year. I don't want to get caught banking on Mike Evans being a sure thing. And last one in the 6th round, James Robinson, 69.4. All right, listen to me. James Robinson is Josh Jacobs at a 2-round discount. Not pound for pound, but aside from the difference in draft capital, first-round pick versus undrafted guy, these two really aren't that different. Jags' offensive line isn't great, and now the Raiders isn't either because they cut everybody. Jags drafted first-round running back Travis Etienne. Raiders signed Kenyon Drake. James Robinson has Trevor Lawrence, exciting rookie. Josh Jacobs has Derek Carr, which is the new-age Alex Smith. And both of their defenses are bad. I'm not saying James Robinson's going to repeat as a top-10 running back. His ceiling is absolutely capped here. But I kind of feel like I'm buying the Urban Meyer reports that Travis Etienne is going to be handling the hybrid slot role, the Curtis Samuel, Percy Harvin role, which means that there could still be some value between the 20s and in the red zone for James Robinson. I think this is a fair landing spot for James Robinson, and he may fall even further because the public is so down on him. But in the 6th round, when you're looking at guys like Chris Carson and potentially reaching on Miles Gaskin and Kareem Hunt, running backs can get a little scary around here, so I'm definitely fine taking Robinson as ideally my RB3, but you could survive with him as an RB2. 7th round. 4 names all in a bucket right together. Jerry Jeudy, Kenny Golladay, DJ Chark, and Cortland Sutton. All between 73 and 84 ADP. All of these guys are potential number one targets on their respective teams in the 7th. That's larceny. Jerry Jeudy's been absolutely crucified for the drop issue this year, but Drew Lock should get a fair amount of that flack for his own inaccuracy and inability to hit receivers on time. At the end of the day, 113 targets as a rookie is nothing to scoff at. Drops are fluky, kind of like touchdowns. Jeudy can only go up from here. And there are NFL corners that rave about his route running. He just runs routes different. He's always open. Go watch 3 minutes of Jerry Jeudy highlights and you will see him turn all pro corners completely around. I'm back in on Jeudy. 7th round is incredible. Kenny Golladay played in just 5 games last year. A hip injury cost him most of the season, but a full year healthy, didn't need surgery as far as I know. Lands with the Giants in free agency, can immediately step into that offense. Probably not a threat for 130, 140 targets like some of the other top wide receivers, but can easily be the alpha. Is also great in the red zone. Both things that the Giants offense really lacked. Really like his chances to get with Daniel Jones this year, who was a pretty competent deep ball thrower, all things considered. DJ Chark dealt with 4 separate injuries last season, which is just not acceptable. You can't do that as a professional wide receiver, let alone one that's being counted on to be the number one. Urban Meyer came out and said that he was not happy with his size or his toughness, and DJ Chark has reportedly taken that to heart, bulked up in an effort to prevent that again from this season. People forget that DJ Chark was quietly wide receiver 17 in 2019 with Gardner Minshew at quarterback, and now he has Trevor Lawrence. DJ Chark could be a nice bounce back wide receiver 2 or 3. And Cortland Sutton. Yes, I listed 2 Broncos wide receivers as potential number one targets on their team because it's true. Either one of them could. My money is on Judy over Sutton, just because Sutton is coming off the torn ACL, but Sutton himself, similar to DJ Chark, was wide receiver 19 in 2019 with a QB carousel consisting of Drew Lock, Joe Flacco, and Brandon Allen. We have not seen Cortland Sutton's best football. Seventh round, easily wide receiver 2 or 3 with upside. All right, last part of the seventh round I'll talk about. We're going to play a small game called Keep Trade Cut Steeler Edition. Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, and Juju Smith-Schuster, all going between ADP 72.6 and 81.4. This wide receiver core is a clusterfuck. 39-year-old Ben Roethlisberger that either couldn't or wouldn't throw the deep ball in 2020 isn't what you want to anchor a dynasty wide receiver to. Big Ben's intended air yards were 6.9 per pass attempt. That's ridiculously low. That's Drew Brees level. And it shows because all three of these receivers finished with 100 targets on the season. So as far as what I'm doing, if I got to keep one guy, I think it's close between Claypool and DJ. DJ is the mid-ground here. He had a lowish average depth of target for an outside wide receiver because of Ben Roethlisberger, as well as both injury and drop issues. Those are unacceptable. But man, he's got an elite target share as the primary chain mover. He immediately stepped in and filled that I need to play Antonio Brown role for Ben Roethlisberger, and I'd expect that to continue. I'm also on board with Claypool as the upside pick. He's the size-speed matchup. He's the prototypical wide receiver that is great for Dynasty. I do kind of worry about him this year, though, because he was the deep threat in this wide receiving core, but that role is capped if Ben just can't or won't throw deep anymore. And that's why Claypool was kind of hit or miss for most of the year. Those are my keep and my trades. So Juju's kind of the odd man out here to cut. Now, Juju is absolutely being undervalued as a floor play. He was probably the most consistent of all three of these receivers last year. But in terms of dynasty, he is the odd man out. 79% of his snaps were in the slot. He's primarily a slot wide receiver. And just judging on the entire body of work, I think the jury is pretty much out that Juju is just not a number one wide receiver. He's not the type of receiver that can anchor a pass game. I think Claypool and DJ both profile as more of that than Juju does. I also really don't expect Juju to be back next year. I was honestly surprised he signed back with the Steelers. I think he was met with a very cold market for kind of the same things that I'm saying about him not being a number one and justifying that price tag. And he also hit free agency in a very slot deep offseason between the draft and the other slot receivers that were available in free agency. So took a 1 year to stay and maybe try to go deep into the playoffs again. As far as next year, I have no idea where he lands. It was rumored that he was talking with Baltimore as well as Kansas City. So I think Juju is definitely too high. He's probably the one that I wouldn't take in the seventh, especially when you can get somebody like Tyler Boyd or somebody else with floor in the ninth round and beyond. I'm probably not messing with Juju. He would need some pretty crazy reception and touchdown numbers to beat out a seventh round ADP. And bringing it home with the eighth round, talk about the competitors, QB2s to the moon. Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, and Tom Brady, going between 85.5 and 90.2. All three of these quarterbacks are on the older side. All three of these quarterbacks are flush with receiving weapons. It's very easy for me to see them going earlier than this in startups. Not so much Ryan, but definitely Cousins and Brady. Matt Ryan and Kirk Cousins are almost assuredly the starters for the next two seasons after their respective restructure and extensions. Just the way the cap balances out, they're going to be around for a little while. I understand people wanting to get out of Matt Ryan, but he's definitely a serviceable QB2 for the next couple of years if you have some depth behind him. Yes, losing Julio Jones stings a little bit, but Arthur Smith coming to town, he should be maximized well. If you can hope for 70% of what he was with Kyle Shanahan, I'd count that as a win. Same thing with Kirk Cousins, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, Herb Smith, Dalvin Cook. Love him as a QB2. Usually see him going in the sixth, but ADP-wise, to see him down here is a little surprising. Now, as far as Tom Brady, the Bucs are off the hook if Brady retires after this season because they can recoup $16 million of his signing bonus. But he is a fringe QB1 this year. The Bucs also have the fourth easiest strength of schedule this year as opposed to the murderer's row that they faced last year with nothing but playoff caliber and division matchups and having to wait for their bye week until week 13. And last pair of guys in the eighth round is Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, going 79.6 and 86.8. What can you say about these two that hasn't already been said? Sean McVay's scheme has kept these two the same serviceable and reliable wide receiver twos that they've always been, except now they have Matthew Stafford, who I would say in real football is an upgrade over Jared Goff. Whether or not that translates to fantasy remains to be seen, but killer value for very known commodities. In the eighth round, you can't beat it. I figured I'd cut this off at eight rounds deep because I could go on and on about every guy in the ninth round and beyond that I kind of like. But some honorable mentions, some potential number one wide receivers for pennies on the dollar. You're looking at Odell Beckham Jr. and Michael Pittman in the ninth round. Both of these guys just have really nothing established in front of them, and the onus is on them to get as much as they can handle. Same thing with Robbie Anderson and Brandon Cooks, and to a lesser degree, Will Fuller, who's now in Miami. And man, you got to take a stab at one of the Jets wide receivers. Corey Davis, Elijah Moore, and Denzel Mims all going between the 10th and 12th round. One or more is going to return value. Love those darts. Also for some valuable slot and hybrids, some floor plays, guys like Laviska Shenault in the 8th, Tyler Boyd, and both Debo and Curtis Samuel in the 9th. Just really brings some stability to a wide receiver core, really rounding out that third spot or the flex spot. Debo and Curtis Samuel also providing a little bit of extra rushing upside, being the hybrid slots in their offense. Lead running back potential for pennies, Michael Carter and Mike Davis in the 9th. Not in love with either one of these guys, but with such a tragic depth chart on their respective teams, I'm okay with the price here. As well as Damian Harris in the 10th. Heavily used last year. Sony Michel's got about 3 games left of good play before that knee gives way. And they've really fortified that offensive line and offense in general to be very run heavy. And Damian Harris could pay dividends in the 10th round. Quarterback values, Derek Carr and Jared Goff. Same thing. You know what these guys are. Solid, stable floor quarterbacks. If a guy at another position falls to a value in the mid rounds and you forego quarterback, you can double back on one of these guys and feel okay about 2021 and possibly beyond. And Jameis in the 12th. Jameis has had his issues in the past, but clearly the New Orleans Saints wanted to at least give him somewhat of a shot to be the starter for the post-Drew Brees Saints. I absolutely take that stab in the 12th round, and I would throw Taysom Hill there for the same reason. And tight ends, geez, like I said, if I don't get Hockenson or one of the top four, I'm just punting. Anywhere in the double digits is legitimate for me. Robert Tonyan's on the top of the list if Aaron Rodgers ends up staying in Green Bay. Also looking at Logan Thomas, any of the New England tight ends, Cole Kmet, Adam Trautman, Jared Cook, and Zach Ertz, if and when he is traded or cut. Woo! All right. Thank you all for joining. That's it for today. If you enjoyed, don't forget to like and share the show. Follow us at Abstract Dynasty on Twitter. Hit up the reviews. If you have show ideas, if you have questions for the show, hit up the comments or email the show at abstractdynastyff@gmail.com. And I'll leave instructions on voice messages. Until next time, I'm out. Keep grinding.